He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed. We had an interestingly nice weekend. I'll start out with a little bit of driving observations. I saw more Corvettes on the road yesterday out enjoying a remaining, maybe one of the last sunny days of the fall with temperatures in and around 50 than I've seen in a long time. And they were all the old versions. I have seen one no new Corvette. Is it what, the CSAJ8J?
C8.
C8. Since they've been available to be seen on the road, but yesterday it was, and there were five of them between here and my destination, and they were all convertibles with tops down, and it was nice to see Corvettes out because I have not seen a lot of Corvettes out in a long time.
Was there an event at Lime Rock? Which, by the way, did you see the bit on Lime Rock on CBS this morning?
I have not seen a bit on Lime Rock on TV, but I heard it was very good.
I saw it totally by accident. You know, I was just walking by.
Why didn't you report on it, Jill?
Because I didn't see. I saw a quick bit of it. Realized that it was Lime Rock, and was totally impressed. Just by the enthusiasm around it, because. Obviously, someone was focused on getting people they were talking to Skip. The guy was talking to Skip, and it was more about what was it like. It was the excitement of racing. You know, because I really feel as though there is a responsibility of those who have done it to wake up the people who haven't. Like, this is something fun you might want. You know, fun. More than fun that you might want to do. You know, so that's I the few minutes I saw was really successful from that angle, but I just wondered if either one of you had seen it.
No.
Not yet, but okay. I'll make a point of it.
And but I did see the new Hummer. Pictures of it are flying across the news waves, and it's going to be all electric, and Jay will have a comment in a minute, I think, but it really looks fascinating. I think it's going to be a winner for GM against, it's all electric, and it's going to be a winner against the Rivian versions and any of these other upstart versions that are coming out, including their own domestic pickup trucks. There'll be a lot of people who want this vehicle. It's going to come in single price units for different levels of the vehicle. And Jay, you wanted to mention something about...
It was interesting that GM is announcing that it will be a no-haggle pricing policy with the Hummer EV starting at $112,000, and dealers will not have the ability to mark it up or mark it down, and they have to sign up or sign on the program to be eligible to sell the vehicle, the Hummer.
Well, however they do it, I don't think it's going to be a problem. I am happy, Jay, to hear that they won't be able to mark it up over the so-called one price level, because as we know, dealers are prone to do that with exciting new models, and the one word that comes is gouging the public.
So I understand
the dealer's ability to set a price on a car, and they still do that to a certain degree by putting up a lot of add-ons on their vehicles and lots that may or may not be desirable. I've seen it across numerous vehicle dealership lines over the years, and while I don't like it, it is legal to do. But I think the Hummer is going to be a real winner, and I suspect Jay agrees. Well, it really looks intriguing, I must say.
I've been watching the ads because they've been flogging it to bits, and I just want to say earth to people. For the people who are going to be able to afford that.
And there'll be plenty of them, don't worry.
I understand, but they're perfectly happy to negotiate. The rest of us, the Saturn pricing was, and I don't know if you have seen these. There's another series of adverts. Again, you've got to watch sports, but about the it's to convince people to buy things on to buy basically the equivalent of pigs in pokes with cars. You know, don't go to a dealership; just take what they send you. And I would just digress for a minute. I've got an interesting thing that I'm watching. With brokers selling puppies that way. So there's an entire generation that is very programmed, if you will, to just buy, you just take what they send you. You limit your search. You know, it's like Labrador is New England, and then whatever comes up, it comes up. So I am really struck by that sort of consistent attrition or reduction of free will and comparison.
I'm gonna disagree a little bit. I think that, you know, speaking more the specifically the car world and our choices in cars, I think the choices have never been greater, and our ability to research them without having to be without the hassle of being in a dealership has enabled us to really research and find the car.
We're not talking about the same thing. I agree with you 100%. Okay. I'm talking about the people who don't do that. They just type in XYZ, Labrador, and then so that those are your that's the bit I'm talking about. Not all research, all fun, all, you know, and then find the best one for the best price, if there is a price, and have it delivered to your door. I'm totally cool with that. I'm talking about that little other step.
Well, I don't understand any of that, but anyways, let's get back to cars, because at least I understand a little bit about that. On the Hummer situation, I can't wait to see one or get hold of one to drive when it gets on the road. Jay, is it a year away?
I don't know. And you know what? You thought I might be that enthusiastic. I'm only moderately enthusiastic because I think the brand had its peak once and then died once, and now we're trying to
resurrect the brand.
And we're trying to, GM is trying to apply a business model that they've tried before, and the intent is great, but I honestly doubt that in a still very much controlled by dealership automobile industry, I don't see that no haggle pricing.
I don't know how long that will hold.
It's not going to work very long.
It may not work very long. It worked for a while with Saturn, and then it got diluted as
And if Hummer does great, and they have a great electric vehicle, it's great. The vehicle looks promising, and it would be great.
They're taking orders, as did Tesla with its bulletproof truck, and I have yet to see a Tesla version of it on the road. I don't think we're going to see it too soon, or maybe we will, but I suspect that you have these rarefied sort of upper price level vehicles that are coming to the market from a number of fronts, and I'm not limiting this to comment to the Hummer per se, but there are plenty of people out there that want something that looks different from everything else. And certainly the Tesla truck takes the prize on that front. But the Hummer is, I think the new Hummer look is great, and it will be certainly, it may be short-lived rush to buy them. You know, the Jeep pickup truck started out when they delivered, and the manufacturer delivered mostly high-end versions of it to the dealerships, and they were all up in the $50,000+ range, and there was a lot of price resistance. And now the market has settled into a more regular pace for these pickup trucks, and you see a lot of the lower level versions out on the roads, and I go and look at the stickers, and a local dealership here is getting more modestly priced vehicles on their lot to sell, as opposed to the top of the line Renegade versions, which are fully loaded with all the options and not what everybody wants to buy. And I, you know, the Hummer, you said it was 120 something thousand for the base model. And they'll go up from there. Eventually, they will have sold out to the market to can afford to buy those at those prices, and they're going to have to decide to whether or not to dilute the so-called one-price program.
On another note, have you seen the Aviator, the Lincoln Aviator Presidential? And I don't know that it's a U.S. Market version of it, but I saw this on Supercar Blondie, if anybody follows Supercar Blondie, and if you don't, you should.
Okay.
I'll get back to her in a second. But the Lincoln Aviator Presidential is like the limo version of the Aviator, and it's got all the bells and whistles, like seats that move in 30 different directions. You can adjust your left leg and your right leg independently. It's pretty cool. And all that for $80,000. And I guess you can buy it today. At least in Dubai, you can. And hopefully you can buy it here in the U.S. too. Anyway, Supercar Blondie is a...
intriguing.
Is a journalist who presents cars and is on a bunch of different social media, YouTube, Instagram, you know, Facebook, all of them, has millions of followers and presents hypercars, supercars, concept cars, show cars, and drives them around a lot of times in Dubai, sometimes in London. But there's some very interesting and mouth-watering vehicles to be seen on her different channels. It's cool to be seen.
All right. No, I looked at when I was looking for something. I shall we say sampled it, and it is certainly worth. It's certainly worth the eyeballs.
Well, you know, my opinion about a couple of things about this Navigator version, the presidential version, is if they're going to put all these gadgets and gizmos into these vehicles, they ought to start giving. If not a lifetime warranty, a better warranty on these vehicles if you're going to go out and buy the top level than 3 years and 36 or 50,000 miles. Because once these gizmos start failing, who knows what it's going to cost to get them operating again once you've gone beyond the warranty. And that goes for lots of levels of cars that are coming on with more and more technology, electronics technology, and computers and all that are operating these cars. I know that they have tested millions of miles of test miles have proven theoretically that these all these gizmos are going to work for a long time.
They are.
For the occasional ones that break down, it's going to be a pocketbook nightmare, I think, in getting them back and operating again. I am going to find out just about how much that's going to be along in my Jaguar that is going into a shop sometime later this week. For a repair to the air suspension fault that's showing on the screen, and I have absolutely no air suspension operation going on in this particular vehicle. It's an XJR from 2004 vintage years.
That's and, because you don't drive it enough.
I don't know that driving it makes the air suspension work better during the course of driving or not, because I don't know what the cause and effect is. It's the point of this is how much is it going to cost to fix it. When we've been driving cars with springs and shocks for years, and rarely do the springs fail, but they do. And shocks have gotten very good and seem to last a very, very long time in the suspension business of vehicles. But we know that the Ram pickup has got a coil suspension as opposed to a leaf suspension on the rear of its base 100 models or whatever they are that vehicles, and it makes it ride nicely. And there are, I believe, the Range Rovers have air suspension again, and so do I. You can get air suspension on other vehicles. The Lincoln Navigator has an air suspension as well.
And I
criticized the air suspension in the Lincoln Navigator when I test drove it because it had no rebound control, which to me, that's not quite accurate. No is not the right word, but very little rebound control on bumpy roads because the shocks were not of a quality caliber that would control the rebound part of the air suspension after the compression level. So at the compression level. So, and I don't know what's going on. We've talked about repair costs on all these vehicles with all these cameras going on, and that's not a warranty situation. That's just a plain expense situation that's going up on a lot of these cars with all this technology that you're going to see in your insurance costs when you go to insure some of these new cars, because the insurance companies are finding out just how much it costs to fix these cars with all these camera gadgets going on around the bodies and the like.
Do you think that's a surprise?
No, it's not a surprise. But, well, it's a surprise because I don't think buyers know that they get when they buy these cars with all these new high-fangled gadgets to protect us from ourselves, what's going to happen if they're impacted by an accident. We don't think about that when we go in and buy a car.
Shouldn't we?
And you won't think about it as long as you're not in an accident. But if the car's in an accident, it's going to cost a lot more to get the car back in shape than it used to because of all this added technology.
Out of accidents to begin with, some of them anyway. I mean, the whole point of some of these gadgets is to keep you out of accidents. Crashes, not accidents.
Right? Yes, but you know the accidents aren't necessarily the driver and owner's fault. The accidents come to them from other drivers and other cars that don't have all this accident prevention stuff. And, you know, the car can't keep you from getting in an accident. It can help you avoid an accident for sure if you're paying attention. But if somebody goes through a stoplight on one side of an intersection and rams into the side of you, that
still,
has nothing to do with
responsible.
All the stuff keeping you from being hit by that car.
Excuse me, that's my point. It's been my point all along. If you get broadsided going through an intersection, you might have been able to avoid that situation.
Okay, Jay. We will debate this outside the show.
What, it's not as much a debate as it is there needs to be an awareness. This doesn't have to be argued. There are obvious trade-offs for the safety. But that being said, and I will switch to a slightly less sensitive topic. Good insurance doesn't automatically offer glass coverage. You have to ask for it. And I was surprised to discover this because I just always, I don't know, maybe I had different insurance along the way, but it's unless you know to ask or know to check, you may find yourself thinking that you don't have a problem with the pebble that you end up having a problem with.
Well, I don't know what companies are starting to make that an optional requested form of coverage because...
Progressive?
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I've heard a lot about Progressive Insurance Company, and they have a lot of advertising out there promoting themselves.
Right, and I would just check because it was again.
They are sort of an a la carte insurance company. I'm afraid that's how they sometimes can save you money, but if you don't know it, my insurance companies are not Progressive, and I don't have a problem. It's automatic in all my vehicles, whether I've got. Collision on all of them or not.
Let's just be clear. If you're driving a new car, and I, you know, I'm going to make Robin's point here, and we've discussed this, but it, glass still cracks. You still get a lot of pebbles, and windshields are more and more expensive to replace. They have all the cameras, all the sensors are often attached to the windshields, and. It's taking more technical know-how than ever before to simply replace a windshield on a lot of new
cars. Listeners should, I agree with Jill, listeners should start knowing what they're getting in for their insurance payments now. My insurance company also recently went to six-month coverage, which I think a lot of insurance companies have been there ahead of it. And that just makes me have to remember that when 6 months go by, I'm going to get another bill and I got to get other insurance cards because insurance cards are only going for 6 months.
What was the reasoning behind that? I had
it's the industry trend. I don't know exactly. Insurance rates they may be trying to.
Is it an opportunity
to not get
review?
Stuck on one level for a whole year? I don't know what it is.
I was curious. All right.
But in any event, it's going to be a nuisance because, you know, you put an insurance card in your car, and I've been doing it for years. I know it's a year long, at least I think it is, and now I've got to sit there and watch and make sure that I get the next six-month level of insurance card set once they're sent to me into the vehicle in case I get stopped and asked for an insurance card.
Right. No, old dog, new tricks. But the point is, I'm more curious about the profit of. I'm just more curious about the thinking behind it. I almost.
Well, theoretically, I'm not paying any more on an annualized basis for the 2 6-month terms. But I, you know, I'm not going to. Am I going to sit there and try to compare it? No, I don't have time for doing that. It's very possible that the second 6 months might be a slightly different price than the first 6 months, but that's not what the insurance company is telling me is going to happen. So I'm not exactly sure what their issue is.
Jay, any insight?
Jay,
no. Okay. I mean, I just put new insurance cards in my
Jay's
car.
Got. Let's get the van life, Jay.
So that means no safety. Okay, we got 3 minutes. Whatever
you
want to
do. Yeah, let's get the van life, Jay. You had a whole thing in
van. Oh, my van life. It's just my new fantasy. It's, people who know me know that I've been wanting to. I've been looking at Mercedes Sprinters for years now. I love the van. One of my friends got me thinking about a Ford Transit instead. They're more economical to operate. Ford versus Mercedes. Makes sense, I guess. The idea
more dealerships to run into if you're going cross country and you have a problem with it too.
The idea behind the myth or the fantasy of the van life is all the bells and whistles you can get to modify a seemingly utilitarian van, to modify it to turn into a travel vehicle, and I just think it's a cool way to travel the country, drive, and have a practical vehicle for work purposes. If you can use a van, if you can justify a van in your business or in your line of work, and I think that there's a way to build out these vans to make them, you know, multifunction.
Well, Jay, and you can get them in all sizes, and they're much more maneuverable than the motorhome level of these vehicles.
Yep. You can get them all-wheel drive, too.
And for one or two people, you can get all-wheel drive if you need to, but you can sleep two people in the mid-size vans, and you can sleep probably four in the large-size vans, and the large-size vans are pretty big. But a friend of ours recently pulled into the driveway at my office.
Yep.
And he had driven across from Montana all the way here with his wife, and he had a beautiful, large version of what Jay's been talking about, and it was a diesel-powered vehicle. I think it was a Mercedes-based vehicle,
yeah.
And it was only two-wheel drive, but he said he had no problem with it, but it had a generator and all sorts of doodads on it, and he said it was fabulous to come across country, and he had no problems doing so and finding a place to park at night and all that kind of thing.
Well, I'm glad he had a good time. All right. Any final words?
Safety. Wet roads are slippery. Jay brought it up in a couple of shows ago, and now the wet leaves have fallen on the roads, along with the wet roads having grease base on them from lack of rain for years, or for months, I should say, not years. It can make starting up with a high-performance car of any kind, a little bit dicey, even with the electronic stability controls and that kind of thing. But definitely going around corners and or too fast on wet roads with leaves on them is as bad, if not worse, than being on a snow-covered road.
Especially in the 1987 Mazda RX-7, right?
Yes, definitely in that.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.